Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Sarah Fort, and I've been leading Bible study this week. Our topic has been wisdom in the Old Testament, because wisdom and folly are intimately connected in the biblical tradition, as we'll especially see today in today's reading. Let me begin by asking if you've got any leftovers from the readings that we've done this week, anything that you'd like to share that's come to you. That's fine. Oh, yes.
It's not directly about the reading. In fact, I didn't bring it up then because it wasn't. But someone said something about giving an example if your child was threatened, would you kill someone? And I was thinking about it, I think that's the main reason people are killed. Because I think in wars, we are convinced to go to war because something is threatening our way of life and our children. Yes, we do.
That refers to the reading in 2 Samuel on Tuesday, where a wise woman negotiated the surrender of a rebel rather than have her town besieged, but it entailed throwing the guy's head over the wall. So we had a conversation about sacrificing the one to save the many. Yeah. Anything else that's come up? Well, let me read you to you some of today's lesson. Does not wisdom call, and does not understanding raise her voice? On the heights, beside the way, at the crossroads, she takes her stand, beside the gates in front of the town. At the entrance of the portals, she cries out, to you, O people, I call, and my call is to all that live. O simple ones, learn prudence, acquire intelligence, you who lack it. Hear, for I speak noble things, and from my lips will come what is right, for my mouth will utter truth. Take my instruction instead of silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than jewels, and all that you may desire cannot compare with her. By me kings reign, and rulers decree what is just. By me, rulers rule, and nobles, all who govern rightly. The Lord created me at the beginning of his work, at the first of his acts of long ago. Ages ago, I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs, abounding with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth when he had not yet made earth and fields or the world's first bits of soil. When he established the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the deep. When he made firm the skies above. When he established the fountains of the deep. When he assigned to the sea its limit so that the waters might not transgress his command. When he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the human race. Meet woman wisdom, the personification of wisdom. Thoughts on first hearing what we just listened to.
I noticed that wisdom was a female image.
Female, yeah. What do you make of that?
I think I've heard somewhere that the word for wisdom, that the language that these were written in, that there were, it's like Spanish, that there's masculine and feminine words.
That is true. In Hebrew, the word is chokmah, which is a feminine noun. This goes a little beyond just being a gendered noun. do you think?
What, yes. Well, that was my first thought too, that that wisdom was presented as a woman, and I think the new way of knowing God, that the wisdom, the female wisdom gives us, the Creator, I think we generally look at it as a, or I should speak only for myself, as a powerful figure. And I just love the final verse that she delighted in humans.
Yes.
Yes.
This makes it clear.
What else? Yes.
Well, yesterday you had commented on Proverbs being written probably for the upwardly mobile young men. And women were not painted in a good light in much of what we read before. And so the feminine side is so much more positive.
Yes. Yes. This sort of wisdom literature, like Proverbs, Ben Sirach, the Wisdom of Solomon, was very much by men, for men. And you mentioned the upwardly mobile young men. So that makes it intriguing that they characterize women as female, I think. Yeah. And anyone else? Thoughts? Yes.
Is this in any creed?
Is this in any creed?
Seems to be conveniently forgotten from all the creeds.
Yes. What leads you to point that out? What is it?
Well, the creeds seem to, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. That's
it. Yes.
No and, wisdom.
And not Mother Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yes. We'll dive into that even further. Other thoughts? Yeah, Doug.
Well, it feels like this kind of language reminds me of the Logos language in the Gospel of John as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the Hebrew Chokmah translates into the Greek Sophia, and I think it absolutely, John absolutely picked it up from that tradition. Because also there's a very philosophical, well, there's starting to be in Proverbs and increasingly in the other wisdom books of Sirach and Wisdom of Solomon, very much Greek philosophy starts to influence it, and that's where the Logos theology of John takes root. Yes.
Is it partly feminine because the idea that a young man might be seduced by a woman to go off the right path into trouble, and so the opposite voice would be equally seductive in the positive?
Oh, that's such a good point, because so much of this language is very seductive. I'm standing in the street and I'm calling to you. But what we'll find is that there's a parallel strange woman who's also in the book of Proverbs. That's where I'm reading today. It's juxtaposed very concretely against the woman who leads you down to death. Yeah. We'll look at that later. Other thoughts?
I was struck by her being out there and her call, come to me, come to me, that invitation. And then just being there with God at creation.
Yes.
Together. Start more of a part. Well, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. But
we'll spend some time on that. Yeah. Well, when you say she's out there calling, how does that strike you? What?
As an invitation.
An invitation.
To wisdom. In a good way.
Uh-huh. It says that she's at the gates, at the crossroads. Well, the gates particularly would be important in the city, that traditionally that was where matters for adjudication were brought and publicly adjudicated. So she's right in the center of civil discourse. It's like standing on the steps of City Hall. Yeah.
And just that part of it hearkened to me back to the reading of the woman who came out of the gates when the city was besieged.
Yes. That's good. There are echoes of that, aren't there? Yeah.
And I think also echoes of Solomon, that high wisdom content so much better than riches.
Yes, yes, that's right. We on Monday we read about Solomon. He didn't ask for riches or land or wealth. Yeah, he wanted wisdom. Yeah. And anyone else? Doug, and then.
Okay. Well, it's just that as we've been tracking wisdom over the last few days, the wisdom we meet here feels like it takes us to such a deeper place. I mean, this is the creative power. This is what was there, like the sun, like the Logos, with God at the creation. I mean, that's much larger, again, just a larger place than we've been before, it feels to me.
Okay, good, yes.
I have an interesting verse from Genesis 1:27. So God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them.
And how does that reflect on our reading?
Well, there are different creation stories in
right.
Genesis. And one is he created man in his image, and you know, then he had to do the rib thing. But this one, this one says he created man, humankind in his image, male and female, he created them.
Mm-hmm. So is that... So wisdom is the female, or
if she was there at creation, I'd say this sort of says that she was actually part of God.
Ah,
said he created them in his image. It still says his, but then it says male and female.
Okay, well, we'll go to that in a moment when someone else back there wanted to say something. Yes.
Well, isn't the Hebrew culture a matriarchal culture, so the mother is in the home doing a great deal of the teaching, and she would have the wisdom to put into, she would impart the wisdom to the children, and most likely specifically the son is going to go out into the world.
Okay, let me clarify one thing. In the ancient days, the culture was decidedly patriarchal, that women married into a family and went to the husband's home. You might be thinking of the contemporary Jewish tradition where this Jewishness is marked by blood through the mother. And that actually developed after in the first century when Jews scattered, or maybe before, but anyway, it was solidified by the early rabbis when the Jews were scattered and mixed up with all these foreign people, and so the only way you really knew that you were a Jew was because you came out of this woman's body. But but the other piece that you mentioned about wisdom, women imparting the wisdom and instruction, that's salient because I think that in many of the prohibitions that you read in the Old Testament about the Israelites not marrying into foreign tribes was because women were recognized as the culture bearers. That if someone was going to be led astray, it was because women, I mean, it's also some misogyny in there, but it's also because women were recognized to be the ones who gave instruction. So there's all of that. Yeah. Other thoughts? Well, why don't we open up your Bibles, if you have one, to Proverbs 8. I skipped around in this reading because some of it's redundant.
What verse was that
again? Well, we're in chapter 8. I have to say, this discussion could go so many different ways that I feel like I'm juggling all these balls. So, and I'm going to speak at Vespers tonight, so it's going to come out of our conversation. Give me good stuff. Doug raised an interesting point, and that was about the depth of what this wisdom brings us. So in that case, maybe we could look at the first 21 verses of chapter 8. because that's when wisdom defines who she is, what she brings to people. So how about if you read through that and tell me, how does she define wisdom? What is wisdom in these verses?
Which is right.
Which is right, okay.
Learn prudence.
Prudence, okay.
Acquire intelligence.
Intelligence.
Uh-huh. Noble things.
Noble things. Good.
Truth.
Okay.
My version says understanding.
Understanding. Okay.
Righteous.
Righteous. Okay.
Instructing.
What else?
Discretion.
Insight.
Knowledge.
Justice.
Humility.
The fear of the Lord.
Uh-huh. Fear of the Lord. That'll start a conversation. Okay. Others?
Wealth. Verse 21.
Yeah.
More valuable than anything.
More valuable. Okay, I'll see most make that as clear.
Paradox. You're talking about the question is what is wisdom?
Well, how does she define herself in there? Yeah. We'll get to the paradox. That's good.
I see hatred of evil.
Okay. Hatred of evil.
Not perverse.
Not perverse. Okay, so there are positive and negative definitions.
Counsel.
We have strength. She says, I have strength.
Makes me think of Betsy and Mark's song last night.
Inclusivity.
Inclusivity?
Mm-hmm.
Is that actually in the text? Or
not
that?
The word, but I cry out. My cry is to all that live.
Ah, okay. So we'll define her as inclusive. Yeah. Although, and this goes back to the point that someone said about this being literature for men on the go. Do any of you have the old RSV translation there? Most of you have. And who does she say that she's calling to? It gets obscured. You know that the New Revised Standard Version made an attempt to have more inclusive language, but sometimes it covers up the sexism of the Bible, and it's...
Is it to you, O men, I call?
To you, O men, I call. That's right. And to the sons of men.
O
foolish men, pay attention. And I don't think that they necessarily were being inclusive of that. That it was for men. Just to point that out.
Plain?
Yeah, plain. Doesn't that fit with Holden? In this version.
Playing.
Left my
Yeah. Plain. Well, this is quite a list for wisdom. Let's start with you, Doug. Would you add anything to it? You said it was deep.
I would add that she calls.
She calls.
Yeah, I call to everyone on earth. And I'm just the resonance of that in terms of calling and vocation. I mean, there's something about that that strikes me at least.
Yes.
The phrase that caught me at my eye here, she takes a stand. So there's an active role here.
Okay.
All right. About the plane, the words of my mouth are plain.
Oh, how interesting. The words of my mouth are plain. All right. Do you think there's anything missing from this description of wisdom? I don't know. I don't have any secret answer, but...
It says, I love those who love me. So I think love is part of it, describing her as well.
Okay.
She loves.
So this is a very active wisdom, isn't it? Active. She plays, she delights, she loves, yeah.
She also says, my fruit, and so something that feeds.
Ah, okay. She feeds. This is neat. Okay.
Strength.
Strength. Okay, I think we did get strength.
Oh, we did. Oh, I didn't see this.
Yeah. Do you think compassion is in here? She doesn't talk about compassion. But that's one I would want to add.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to being active herself, she calls us to be active in finding her. So
yes.
It's not an imparted... it's not something that's there that's ours. It's something for us to find.
Okay. So we also need to be seekers. Indeed.
Okay. No humor.
No humor? She does play. Mm-hmm. But you want to add humor.
Where's the flavors?
Well, it's at the very end, actually. It's an interesting, let's see, verses 30 and 31. Well, the second half of verse 30, she starts with God. I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and delighting in the human race. So there's a lot of rejoicing.
Well, this is the obvious thing, but often, where I teach in the university, we talk about wisdom a lot because it's a Christian university, but we often talk about it in rather academic terms. As if it's, you know, what you discover as you're researching and exploring through the act of reason and that discerning intellect. And here, wisdom is a living person. Living is a consciousness. I mean, living is a woman. I mean, that personification, which is so obvious, just is so striking. That it's not just this sort of ideal or abstraction that we often, at least I often think about, that's what wisdom is. Wisdom is alive. Wisdom is responsive in relationship.
Okay, it includes intelligence, but it goes way beyond.
Yeah.
So we got compassion and humor.
Well, again, on compassion, there's sort of an unspoken recognition here that she recognizes that we're either blessed or cursed with free will, so we have a struggle.
Uh-huh.
She's offering herself.
Yes. Yeah. Ben Sirach especially plays on that free choice. I think that's good. Yeah. Anything else that you want to add to our list? Humor, compassion. Of course, it could be said she has compassion for people because she's offering herself so freely and she brings such good things.
Understanding?
Understanding is up there? Yeah. Yeah.
If we go to further verses, then you have to get into issues like, is she eternal? And she seems to be eternal.
Okay.
And present at creation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get to that gnarly section that where we down the road.
She's not subversive, though.
She's not subversive?
I haven't seen you subversive.
Ah, okay. Right, back to conventional wisdom, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can take it in different directions, but probably the authors were thinking in pretty conventional terms. Yeah.
She's offering her wisdom.
She's offering? True. We'll see that she says awful things are going to happen to you if you don't follow my way, but right. Let's see. While I'm erasing this, let's read through verses starting at verse 22. You want to just take verse by verse and go to 31. Who wants to start us off? Starting at 22. Yeah, okay.
The Lord brought me forth as the first of his works, before his deeds of old.
Next.
Ages ago I was set up at the first, before the beginning of the earth.
When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no springs abounding with water.
Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills, I was brought forth.
Before he made the earth or its fields or any of the dust of the world.
I was there when he set the sky in place, while he stretched the horizon across the ocean.
When he made firm the skies above, when he established the fountains of the deep.
When he gave the sea its boundary, so the waters would not overstep his command. And when he marked out the foundations of the earth.
Then I was beside him like a master worker, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing before him always.
Rejoicing in his inhabited earth and delighting in the human race.
Good. So let's go a little deeper into this. First of all, what do you hear echoes of? Very clearly, Genesis 1, yeah, and the creation. What are the elements that, in particular, that were part, that you also see in Genesis 1? No depths. Although, in Genesis 1, it says that there was... It talks about the void, so there was sort of kind of something there, when the earth was a formless void.
Tehom is the Hebrew, actually. Tehom, the abyss.
Tehom, yeah. Other particular things that evoke the Genesis 1.
In the beginning.
Okay.
Well, in the sequence of events, so he first created.
Okay.
The water and then the...
Yes, okay. So we've got the heavens, the mountains, assigned the sea its limit.
Rejoicing in his inhabited world and delighting in the human race parallels to
it.
He
was
said
good.
It was good.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So, what are we to make of this? The Lord created me at the beginning of his work. Just a note on the Hebrew, in Genesis, the verb is bara, created, but this is not that same verb. It's actually kana, which I know it gets translated as created, but it could also have the sense of acquire, bought, possessed, or even begot. Begot. Mm-hmm.
Could she be the Word of God? Wasn't that what was really at the beginning?
I suppose it's possible. We can make connections there. But let's read it in its own terms. She says, this is wisdom. Okay. At the beginning of his work, the first of his acts, long ago. Someone said, well, is she eternal?
Yeah, I was wrong, because she's saying, I'm created.
Yes, she came along next, it would seem.
But the Genesis account doesn't indicate that wisdom was the first of God's creativity.
Right. Somehow they left that out, maybe?
I have a children's Bible here, and it says, I, wisdom, was with God when he began his work.
Okay. I was with God.
I was with God. Uncreated, perhaps. this wind.
Okay, all right. Ages ago, I was set up. Interesting, this verb is also used in the enthronement of kings in Psalms. So it's almost like she was being enthroned in the world. Other things that you notice about this passage. How about that when there were no depths, I was brought forth?
Well, that sounds like a birth.
That sounds like a birth. And if you put it together with not the Yahweh created me, but Yahweh begot me, and then I was brought forth, there's all this water and springs. So there's definitely a conception giving birth imagery here. A lot of translations don't like to acknowledge it. It's really hard to see this because it has echoes of what?
Of God being a woman.
God being a woman, right, and giving birth to wisdom, who's also a woman. So or God the Father can give birth, or
some friends have always suggested that the Holy Spirit is the female side of God.
Uh-huh.
And that could be at play here.
Okay. Could be, yeah.
I'm just thinking we're trying to understand this in our wisdom, in our understanding, in mm-hmm. our language, and I think there may not be words for this exactly, and I think there's a danger of trying to put it into exactly the way we understand birthing or father-mother kind of thing, mm-hmm. and I'm very sorry, but I haven't been to the other sessions, who wrote Proverbs? Where did it come from?
Well, it comes out of after the exile, so sometime okay. after 500 B.C., the sages were wisdom teachers. Right. So, you know, you might like a guru,
yeah.
sort of.
But so they were writing out of their experience and their knowledge. And
right.
I'm always reluctant to try to say this is what this means exactly because we don't know for sure.
Right.
We can get essences of it.
Well, that's true.
Thoughts of it.
That's a good thought about interpretation. Yeah.
So, I remember always reluctant to try to nail things down.
Okay. All right, well, we won't nail it down, but we'll walk around it for a while.
I just feel like maybe this is Sophia, or wisdom in this case, this is the same as God. I mean, it's so early on, before anything else, even dust, was created. And it's just... part of me thinks, well, maybe God was lonely and needed a partner to dance with him or her at the beginning. But it's almost inseparable, just like the mountains and the oceans and the trees are a reflection of God, and we ultimately too. Whatever that first creation, in this case wisdom, is also a total reflection of God. So I'm not sure we can even get very far by trying to separate it as a created thing. It's just part of that power of creation.
Okay. Maybe it's maybe it's a way to describe that God is about relationship.
Oh, that God is about relationship. Oh, that's a nice
thing. He's always in relationship with, or he or she, or the creative force is all about relating. And so maybe it's true that it's hard. We can only think of it as two separate things, mm-hmm. but that it's a way to describe that it's about relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You and me.
I noticed at the bottom, some of the words, it indicates some of the words are Hebrew and some of them are Greek. And do we have two kinds of stories mixed together in this?
No, what that means is that the Hebrew texts that came down to us were recent, at least in biblical terms, you know, 9th century of the Common Era. And that, but the Hebrew Bible was translated into Greek starting around 300 years before the birth of Christ. So where we don't have clear texts in the Hebrew, we sometimes have to go to the Greek translation. And then the Dead Sea Scrolls also came along, and that gives us some insight also. So that's why you see the Greek had this, that version may have some variants. You wanted to say something.
I was once teaching a class of seventh graders the creation story, and I know I asked, how did God create? And I was looking for a response that had to do with the orderliness of creation and the goodness and so on. And this boy, who very often did not seem to be paying attention, said that God created with imagination. And I absolutely loved that.
Wow.
And it's come back to me in thinking about wisdom. It's like a mode of creation.
That's neat. That's neat.
The joke is told about the devil and telling God that he could create humanity just like God did. And God said, all right, then I'll take the challenge. And the devil says, okay, we'll take some dirt. God says, wait a minute, where are you going to get the dirt?
I'm noticing the temptation of gold and silver and jewels, and I think there's something about the feminine or the mother in the family setting that seems to be able to anticipate when a child is going to be confronted with temptation, and is often a better teacher. She's saying here that she was there before these temptations arose, so she's willing to be a guide.
Well, that's an interesting take. I'll just add that a lot of men are learning that skill also.
Right. We're a little late.
Well, let me throw something out here. And I'll start by going back to verses 15 and 16, where wisdom says, by me kings reign, and rulers decree what is just. By me rulers rule, and nobles, all who govern rightly. Of course, that evokes Solomon and his desire for wisdom. But it also has echoes of the Egyptian system of justice. So what I'm going to propose is that these sages were working within an international milieu. In fact, there are very strong parallels between the wisdom that comes out of Israel and the wisdom that came down through from Mesopotamia and also Egypt. There's a couple chapters in Proverbs, like I think 22 to 24 parts of that, that almost parallel, line for line, work from Egypt of that same time. So they're working within this milieu. And what I suspect was going on is they're trying to negotiate their way through these competing theologies in part, but they're also drawing inspiration from it. So it helps to know that in the Egyptian religious system, the goddess Maat was the source of Egypt's justice system. And there was a phrase, doing Maat, and that meant being truthful, just, righteous, and accepting the social order. So what we have here are very clear echoes of that. In fact, there's a hymn to Maat that was contemporary with Proverbs, in which Maat was urged to take up residence in the tongue and head of the Pharaoh so that he could act justly. Doesn't that sound like Solomon? So there was international currents floating through here. This kind of pagan goddess imagery actually gets amplified in the later works. Ben Sirach was written around 200 years before birth of Christ, and the Wisdom of Solomon was actually written in the first century of the Common Era. So at a time when Jews were scattered throughout the ancient world. I mean, think about this. After the exile, lots of Jews never bothered to come back. They stayed in Babylonia. It's why there was such a huge Persian population of Persian Jews right up into the 20th century. And they were competing with those who promulgated the traditional religion of Israel were competing with these other trends. And I mentioned Greek philosophy was a really big one. If you read the Wisdom of Solomon, he uses explicit philosophical terms right out of Stoic philosophy. Well, it's kind of a smorgasbord. He pulls from here and he pulls from there. So part of what they're doing is taking the contemporary language, like those contemporary hymns, you know, and Christian rock, and using the forms to try to express something that they know or that they've experienced about Yahweh. At the same time, they're pushing it beyond the bounds of the tradition, because when you think back to Exodus, I mean, that was Yahweh traveling, you know, parting the seas, traveling with the Israelites in the wilderness. But you read the Wisdom of Solomon, and it's wisdom that was there with the people. It was wisdom who was there with Joseph, giving him the dreams and getting him out of prison. It's wisdom. So they had to, they kind of used this plainly goddess imagery in order to explicate it. But what does this do for us today? How do we use this tradition? Where do we go with it? Are we going to set up altars to wisdom in the church?
Good idea. It sounds like it's an aspect of God that was there from the very beginning, that justice and the aspects of wisdom that are just and true are part of God from the beginning, and that that part is a feminine part of God.
Okay. Yeah. I had a class in Genesis here at Oldham some years ago, taught by Rabbi Robert Marks, and I remember he talked about Genesis coming from two different traditions too, which was what I was trying to point out earlier. He did a very good job, and that split kind of apparently continues.
There were many strands in Genesis, so by pointing that to Proverbs, can you say a little bit more about how you see that split?
Well, it refers back, you know, saying I was there in the beginning.
I see.
And it is wisdom, it's the female part. And I cannot remember the two traditions he was talking about for Genesis, but probably one was Babylonian and one.
Okay. They were actually more indigenous than Babylon. Yeah, Doug, you remember.
Well, just to pick up on that earlier reference to that we are made in the image of God, male and female, there's a curious paradox there, because what is the image of God? A God who is imageless. Right? I mean, there is no image of God in the literal sense of an image. And also this notion of this child who says, well, it was God's imagination. Well, imagination, the word comes out of image. So there's a way in which we are made in the image of God. I think the images of this wisdom thing would be one way of putting it. That's the way we're made in the image of God. That we have this same capacity for wisdom, again, not just in an intellectual sense, but in some very deep awareness of what lies at the heart of things, which would be God.
I've always thought that image had something to do with ability to have relationships. To be in relationship as well.
Okay. Yeah.
Does wisdom make an appearance in the Gospels anywhere? I seem to.
Not as Jesus has wisdom sayings, not as a personification like this. Okay. Jesus is a wisdom teacher. Does Jesus reference wisdom?
Take my yoke upon you. That was the yoke of wisdom, wasn't it? The rabbis talked about wisdom being like a heavy yoke, but once you put it on, it was no longer heavy. It led to life.
Could be, but I don't think he uses the, actually says wisdom, does he?
No.
I've just been in the Old Testament too long. So, yeah. Other thoughts? Well, yeah. Ginny.
I think what's helpful to me as I try to sort this all out is to make a differentiation between male, female, and feminine, masculine. Because as a female, when I hear male, I feel excluded. As a male, I'm sure I hear female, I would be feel excluded. Mm-hmm. But if I think of it in terms of God, who is not embodied except in Jesus, that God is both masculine and feminine. That's the image we were created in. Mm-hmm. And we all have masculine and feminine mm-hmm. sides to us. It's mm-hmm. it's really our traditions and our culture that has beat the one to the side, yeah. you know. And so yeah. to me, that's a helpful way of thinking about it.
Masculine and feminine traits.
Masculine and feminine traits, or traits that are traditionally identified. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then you've got gender. But that's a really good point. Girl, did you want to say something? Okay.
I was thinking that the sages who were writing this were looking at their people, their culture as it was, and seeing that things they were trying to express perhaps were more personified in the women and of that day. And so they wrote this in the feminine gender because that was what they were seeing, perhaps. And I think even in our modern day, that seems to be that it's the males that go to war and are the warriors, and it's the females who are the nurturers and perhaps embody at least in part some of these things. Anyway, that's the way it sort of looks like.
Traditionally, I think all of those boundaries are getting much more fluid.
Oh, yes,
now.
Yes, now. Yes,
so,
definitely.
And I want to leave close with this thought. I think woman wisdom was necessary because of monotheism. That the way in which the Hebrew tradition got shaped over time eliminated this vast community of female goddesses, female divinity, that had been long been part of Mesopotamia and Egypt and other cultures. And that in defining Yahweh, in defining God in the Israelite tradition, they defined out a lot of the elements that were traditionally assigned to the goddesses. There's actually a chapter in my book about this, and this comes from the work of an Assyriologist, who read Assyrian and Sumerian. Her name was Tikmafrana Kramer Kramsky. She was at the University of Chicago, and she pointed out that the gifts that Yahweh brought to the Israelites were laws, the priesthood, Sabbath, festivals, and that daily life was sanctified to the extent that people adhered to Yahweh's laws. In the old traditions, in the goddess and gods traditions, the polytheistic traditions of Mesopotamia, the areas that were assigned to male gods, like law and politics, they got assigned to Yahweh. But all of the gifts to humans that the goddesses were responsible for, like birthing and weaving and brewing and farming, all of those were human creations in the Israelite system. And she comments, throughout the Bible, in every aspect of biblical thought, human beings gain prominence in and because of the absence of goddesses. So you had a human culture that wasn't intimately connected with the divine. I mean, we can make it so, but the way in which God gets defined in the Hebrew Bible, holiness resides in doing God's laws, working out according to the laws. Who takes care of holiness? The priests. Human beings mess up in their daily lives. They go to the temple, the priests offer sacrifices, and that's how you restore holiness. So holiness gets very much male identified. And I'm not saying that they thought of that they said Yahweh was male. I mean, you have that very strong tradition of, in the image of God, male and female. But in practical terms, the Israelite religion really got weighted towards the masculine side of things. And this feminine side that had been part of the goddess tradition gets bleached out. And what this scholar says is that, so these great monotheists come along, and when they want to define certain, they want to speak about wisdom, which was sort of a new expression, they had to use female forms. They looked at female forms. There are others too. Lady Zion. Even the prophets, the Hebrew prophets who were so markedly monotheistic, they came up with Lady Zion, Mother Rachel. Jeremiah uses Mother, Rachel weeping for her children. So they called back into being these feminine forms, almost as a, to create a balance in the way in which Yahweh had gotten defined. So that's her theory, anyway. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah. Are there any connections to Eastern wisdom traditions that might have started around the same time? I had the impression that the Tao, for example, came around 500 BC also.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I haven't, I hope someone has done a study like that. I haven't yet found it. But there were Buddhist missionaries to the Near East. So, yeah, it's possible. I'll have to look into that. Yeah, Carl.
This may really be off base, but I remember years ago, the professor, taught me where Jesus is, I'm the way, the truth, and life, and no one comes to me except through me. He said that's a paradox. He says what we hear is this notion of exclusivity, when in reality it's a paradox. By coming through Jesus, you break down all these needs to contain God and define God and keep him male or whatever, and it breaks you open to the need to domesticate God, which then allows other faiths to find expression in Christianity. And does that make sense, that paradox?
That's very interesting.
The narrow door is really a wide door.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, so Jesus and his ministry was like another response to this narrow vision of God.
No, so like he saw that Canaanite woman that's supposedly a dog.
Yes.
And that Canaanite woman breaks open Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
She has more faith than in
the
lost people. You know,
Yeah, and then we closed in Jesus.
Yeah, well, we all love to do that.
Yeah.
The God box.
I identify with that because seems to me, and I don't want to criticize any particular denomination, but there is one that goes to the model of the disciples of justifying the all-male clergy. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me that if you were going to start a new denomination tomorrow and really wanted to do it right, you'd want to go back into the richness of this earlier history, cultural development, and the Gospels are wonderful, but they're sort of the stories of a bunch of people who were stumbling around trying to get it right, and they didn't necessarily have all the answers. And Jesus himself, as a teacher, was encouraging them to go back into their own history and tradition for what could be arguably a firmer basis than. I don't think he was guaranteeing that when he built this church on this rock that Peter, who was making a mistake every other hour, that it was going to be perfect. There's so much more richness and source of guidance in what we're talking about today than there is in the stories of a 130-year ministry.
Interesting. Doug, and then we'll wrap up.
Well, just to try to tie a couple of these pieces together, the notion of the Tao, when missionaries first went to China, and they were struggling with how to translate the first chapter of John, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The word logos, they translated, in the beginning was the Tao. And the Tao was with God. Hmm. Because the word Tao literally translates as way or path. Mm-hmm. And so one way of connecting those is that when Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, he is speaking as the logos. This is, you know, I really wrestle with my evangelical students who, that passage is so difficult because it mm-hmm. seems so exclusive. Mm-hmm. And I'm no theologian, but what I feel in that passage is Jesus speaking as wisdom, as the Logos. Uh-huh. That you come to the Father through that way. That is the only way to the Father. All that wisdom means, that is how we get to the truth, of course. So it's somewhere in there. And the Tao is a very similar concept.
Yeah, good. All right, well, I think that's a great place to note to end on, except to say that tomorrow, I think we'll pick up something, another paradox that Carl pointed out, and that is that wisdom says, I'm better than riches or jewels, but if you follow me, you'll get riches and jewels. And tomorrow, we're going to look at Ecclesiastes. And that's a response to a lot of this conventional wisdom. And so we can wrestle with that paradox more. So thank you for your contributions. Now I have to go home and write my little homily.
Thank you.